Greetings, boys, girls, everyone. It's Mega Ran, and I'm back again with another episode of Random Encounters. This one, more random than the last, maybe. It's probably not so random that I would have talked to K Murdoch, man who helped me make so many of my tracks. So shout out to K for last week's two-part special. And I got another two-parter coming at you. And this one is with a guy I'm really happy to call my friend. The best bout machine, arguably best professional wrestler in the world. Also, amazing gamer. Probably the guy, I mean, there's a couple, but probably the guy I would say is most synonymous with pro wrestling and video games and success at a high level in both. It's Kenny Omega. So I'm going to be talking to him quite a bit. I'm really excited to get into this chat. He was very open, very loose with me. So this thing goes all over the place. I'm not one to shut people up. So So Kenny was really, really awesome to share his time with me. We talked for over an hour. So I had to break it up because I like to keep these podcasts short for people like me with short attention spans. So here it is. Without any further ado, my chat with Kenny Omega. Enjoy.
So, I mean, at first it was rough because, you know, everything was closing down, you know, in a business-wise sense, and being able to kind of connect with fans in a live scene scenario, it just ceased to exist. So having that adjustment period and figuring out what the hell are we going to do, we had that. And I guess we just figured out that maybe the best thing to do for us is just to use Jacksonville as a home base. So for me, that worked out in a best worst case scenario, because I mean, it's kind of close to my home now in Orlando, so it's a drive away.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the severity of this thing, which kind of remains to be seen, who knows just how severe it is. I don't really want to take chances. It's great to drive rather than fly, you know?
Yeah.
So we've made the best out of a bad situation. We're still pumping out shows. And we're doing like the one live, one taped method. So we're doing like one week on, one week off. And coming up for Fighter, we're doing next week live, then the week after live, because it's Fighter.
Okay.
But generally, yeah, it's been different, man. And the gym thing was difficult for a while because all the gyms were closed. I had to kind of scrounge together and piece together like a home gym for myself.
Okay.
Luckily there was a dude kind of close by, and then he had some very nice friends that were into the transport industry that were actually willing to make the drive out here to deliver stuff. I had heard that even like little 2-pound dumbbells from Amazon were sold out, and things like an Olympic bar, just like a barbell, you know, they're being oversold for over $300. So there's just like a huge inflation, just like for the smallest, the most simplest of things that would always be available, you know, just suddenly weren't. But I mean, that was kind of across the board, like for, toilet paper, Kleenex, and like,
it was
like fresh meats and all that. Yeah. So for it's just that adjustment period, but I'm pretty good with all that, luckily.
Nice.
And it takes a lot for me to start complaining. So I just
good. Just
kind of rolled with the punches. And how about you, man? How was it where you were living?
Same here. You know, I remember going to grocery stores and there being this completely barren. And I'm like, wow, this is like crazy. My mom suggested we go to like a giveaway just to like, you know, pick up a couple of like, you know, necessities. And
yeah.
So when we did, there's like armed troopers like handing out toilet paper.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, this is like The Last of Us or something. Like, this is crazy.
It really is.
Like,
yeah.
I couldn't believe it. So,
yeah,
now,
behind like the chain link fence, and they, you know, the mother gets separated from the daughter kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, no, that's my daughter. And then you get poked, back with like the AK.
Step
back,
like,
man.
Yeah,
get back.
You know, it really started to feel like a movie or something, man. And it just kind of showed me like, at the blink of an eye, like things can just completely change, you know. But we were well stocked up. We're a Costco family, so you know, toilet paper and all that was, yeah, we've been good. We've had months supplies at this point. So but
that was
just
one,
like,
lucky thing. Like I hate stepping out, I hate going outside if I don't have to. And I did just move, so there are some things I just didn't have.
Yeah.
But because I don't want to keep going out every day to the grocery store, you know, I did have like two or three of something. So it was at least, if I rationed it and if I was just careful, then, yeah, you know, like for me, like when I wash my hands or dishes and stuff, I was using just like a ton of paper towel. Just like, is it just a germ thing, you know? But now
yeah.
I was like, okay, now I know I can't do that. Like I got to use a tea towel, like a, someone who's living in a crisis, you know.
You got
air dry stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be a little more. It makes us. I think that was the one thing I thought. Like, okay, this could be a positive because it'll
environmentally
make us a lot
conscious. Yeah,
a lot more environmentally conscious. We're like, okay, maybe I don't need three paper towels to wash my hands. You know,
exactly.
Maybe that little square will do it. You know, or things like that. So, what have you learned about yourself in this time? Have you either picked up some good or bad habits, learned some new things, picked up new skills, took some time to do things? What have you learned?
Are we shooting the shit, by the way, or we are actually recording right now?
I think we're recording.
I didn't even know. Oh, jeez. Okay.
Did
I say anything that was politically incorrect from when we started until now?
I think you just said you're the best wrestler in the universe. But other than that, no.
I usually say that for Dave Meltzer to say. Now that's all opinionative stuff. I don't care, man.
No, I'm not worried about that.
Re-ask the question, please.
All right. So, in the pandemic, have you learned anything about yourself? Anything new that you've picked up or maybe realized about yourself? Me, I realized I don't like sitting at home very long, and I get absolutely stir crazy. Going to, like, it feels like a groundhog, you know, Groundhog Day, going to the same thing over and over again. And it starts to drive me crazy. So I have to pick up a new thing, like a new hobby, new skill. So I've just been learning, like, video editing and new things because I just can't sit here and do the same things I do every day. So has there been anything that this time period has taught you about yourself?
A long time ago, I was on this tour, and I guess within the wrestling community, it's pretty popular. It's called the Hell Tours, where you drive over a frozen lake up north, and you're kind of isolated away from normal civilization. So the normal laws, the normal ways of living are just become a foreign concept. You're living by the laws of the land. If you have to go to a grocery store, there's only one, and things like a 4-liter jug of milk are $21. I remember they had pizza pockets, and those were, I think, $29 for just a box of four. So as a you really didn't want to have to rely on going there if you could help it. And I guess in times of a crisis, you have to figure out, you know, how you are, how you really are as a person. And I found that I can be a minimalist. I can be resourceful. I can kind of, you know, burrow in like a tick in my little home. And I can live in that little world and sort of withstand whatever it is. I don't need much. For me, it's just, I got by, and as long as I have enough food, you know, enough water, a roof over my head. And I guess the big thing for me was, you know, of course, internet, but like, you know, video games, something like whatever my hobby is. And luckily that was my hobby. Like I don't have any difficult hobbies to follow. I as long as I have electricity and a TV and some kind of console, I'm a happy camper. Another worry I had was if I'm going to be doing what I do for a living, which is wrestling, and if I'm going to be wrestling in front of no people, you know, am I going to be okay with that? And, you know, it was strange the very first time. But then I remember, man, like I did like at least 10 or so years of backyard wrestling before I did this professionally. So this kind of reminds me just of that, you know, when I never used to do it for people, or whenever I used to never used to be about the sort of the adrenaline rush of having a live house in front of you. I used to just do it because I just love doing it. And luckily, you know, there's still that there where just wrestling and kind of rolling around and goofing around is still fun to me. And I still find it rewarding, and I can still learn in that environment. And actually wrestling in front of nobody now, but it's essentially sometimes live TV or live pay-per-view or a tape show. You learn a lot of new skills and things that can really apply to your craft. And then those will probably go both ways. Once we have a live house again, you know, these skills that I learned now can be applied to when we have people in the buildings as well.
Definitely. Do you think empty arena shows are now with you know, other wrestlers there? Is it a different process of getting psyched up for it without having like the roar of the crowd?
Absolutely. You either have to artificially do it by pretending there are people there, pretending that, you know, if I do this or when I do this, the people would probably act this way. So try to G yourself up in that sense where, you know, you have to feel that kind of energy that isn't there, but pretend it's there, because you really have to believe in yourself, because you essentially will have a million people or so watching what you're doing in that moment, but you don't have any of that real energy that you can feel in that moment. You have to just trust that what you're doing, people are going to like and people are going to feel, and you have to just make up that energy somehow, some way to push yourself forward. It's tough, and it's, I can understand how for people that use that as their primary source of fuel, how it's hard to pretend to have that. And especially with the weather the way it is now here in Florida, it's really hot, it's really humid. You die so quick. Like, no one, the Daily's Place is kind of, I'm not sure, have you been there, Daily's Place?
I haven't been to Daily's, no.
Okay, yeah, but it's kind of partially out, like it's roofed, but it's partially outdoors. It's all like open air.
Right.
So to be in that thick, like humid air with that heat, you can't push yourself the way you normally would be able to in a large air-conditioned facility. So to not only have the energy that you're not feeling from a real crowd with real fans, and then to have sort of a situation where it's not even physically possible to push yourself the way you normally would, but you have to still make it look like you are, because the people watching on TV, they can't tell, and they don't care where you are. They might not understand how much more difficult it is to push the human body to that next level. Depending on temperature, or, you know what I mean? It's things like that where, and I don't blame anyone for that. It's just in the moment, they want to see a show. They want to see a performance, and they don't want to hear excuses like, oh, I didn't have live people there cheering me on, or, oh, you know, it was actually really hot that day. They don't care. They shouldn't care, because they just want to see a show and they want to see their favorites, or maybe they're tuning in for the first time. You can't let that opportunity pass you by. You have to give them a show as best as you can.
Wow, I didn't even think about an extra dimension being the weather.
It's a huge dimension.
That's crazy. Like, thinking about, as a performer, me playing a show, normally, if I was playing an empty show, there's always a part of me thinking like, well, there's nobody here to watch this. Thinking about, okay, there's a camera and there's going to be a million people who watch this live.
Right, exactly.
And will comment on it in real time. And, you know, I'm sure let you know if they feel like you're phoning it in or not. And it's just their first time watching. I didn't think about that either. Like, so it's so much to think about. Like, you just gave me a whole new perspective on that.
I mean, you have to be cognizant of, like, you know, we're still a company in its infantile stages. I made my career in the past decade or so in Japan, so I'm still trying to reach out to new people. I'm trying to cross over into other genres with what I do, so I can't take that for granted at all, at any point.
No, not at all. Let's talk about Japan, or at least the past decade, what you've been doing.
Do it.
When's the last
from
time
a
you've
year,
been to
man.
Japan? And that's where we met. That's right.
Yeah.
Tokyo Game Show, which
that's right.
I guess maybe it's not happening. I don't know.
It's not. Yeah. I think
no,
they already released that. Yeah. They just
okay.
they dropped the news probably a month or so ago. Yeah. It's a shame.
It's a shame. It's probably my favorite, you know, gaming event to go to.
Me too. You and me both. I love it, man.
Yeah. So what's the major difference with entertaining Japanese audiences versus American audiences? Just one thing where you're like, oh, well, you can't do that for these guys because that's not going to work, or vice versa.
I find that the people in Japan, when they have a hobby or when they have something that they love, they commit themselves 100% to it. And that always isn't the case in other countries. A lot of people like to have, you know, a couple fingers and a couple toes in a lot of other projects. So you may only have 20% of someone's focus in that point in time. But in Japan, I feel that people connect to you. If they're there watching you live, or if they're there watching you on stream or on TV or whatever it is, you have their 100% attention. They're not going to be, trying to balance social media and their personal life while they're watching. They are focused on you and they're emotionally connected to you. So I've always felt that I was able to kind of peel into another layer with the fan and the viewer emotionally with my storytelling. And that was always kind of always sort of what I'd hoped to do with my wrestling, is I wanted the people just to feel more. And I didn't want it to be, the easiest comparison is always to compare things to movies, either movies or music or games, you know, something that people more widely understand. But if everyone kind of grew up watching a movie like Transformers, for example, it's entertaining and, get some cool explosions. You might get a few fart jokes every now and then, but there's more to it than that. And there's the ability to tell more than that. And for people to feel more when you're watching someone and experiencing something. And I guess one of the first steps the person watching has to be willing to give themselves to you, to allow you the opportunity to make you feel. So if the person is willing to commit themselves to that moment and to that story, where they're just ready to accept whatever it is you're trying to give them, it's easier to set the table and to set the tone with what you're about to do. I found it was, at least in wrestling, to do that in Japan, where whether I wanted to make them laugh, make them angry, make them cry, they were always kind of ready for it. They weren't going in with a preconceived notion. They weren't going into the match with a certain kind of mood. It allowed me to, even if I wanted to use sort of outside influences, like if I wanted to set up if I wanted, let's say, 3 minutes before a match to do like a hype up promo vid, or if I wanted to do something really cinematic before my actual match, if I wanted to have special entrance music, you know, Japan, the people in Japan and all the promotions I ever worked with were always receiving and ready to allow me to do that, because they never were ones to stifle creativity.
Mm-hmm.
They were never ones to say, well, I know your character better than you, or this company's in my best interest, and thus your idea kind of goes against my vision for the company. It was always kind of like, you know, their workplace was a place for people to flourish. And if you had some kind of creative idea, or if you had something that was outside the box, well, they sort of already invested this time and money into you, so they're trusting you with that time. In America and other countries, it's kind of very corporate, where it's, we have to worry about investors, we have to worry about this, we have to worry about that, the stock market, you know, there's so many other variables that go into a show. And
wow.
Unless it kind of, it's more, it kind of trickles down from like the kind of the company. There's a hierarchy where after you worry about this, that, and the other, you know, you're kind of left with, a handful of things you can do, and then a certain time frame where you have to get it done in. And not only that, but you have, possibly, like I said before, you might have a first-time viewer and you have 7 minutes to kind of introduce yourself, and in that moment, entertain them enough to the point where they're going to say, I'm going to keep watching this episode, and or I definitely want to tune in again and watch this again. So it's kind of like winning small battles, if that makes sense. Like you're not, it's going to be difficult to win them over in one fell swoop. So it's like a consistent ongoing battle, and it's more of a team effort. Whereas in Japan, you can really focus on yourself a lot. For me, a lot of times, I'm sorry to ramble, but I always sort of thought like, okay, in this world, in this point in time, it's just myself and my opponent or opponents.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm was always thankful that I was using the platform provided to me by the company that I was in at that moment. But I had always kind of felt like what I was going to do was going to be different enough from anyone anyway, that it was going to be it's going to be a thing on its own. So I don't have to kind of worry about stepping on someone else's toes or whatever. Of course, you always give them the common courtesy to ask or whatever, but usually everyone there was kind of just like, no, I'm just going to fight. You know, that's it. I'm just going to wrestle. I'm just going to fight. That's what I like to do. So it was easy to do something very kind of that strayed away from that a little bit. And it was super cool to meet so many people who were willing to kind of try something new. So that was, I guess that was the difference though. More limitations in America, and you have to account for people having really full schedules and trying to balance out, you know, multitude of tasks and things they have to do and things that they can't forget, you know, while they're watching the show. And just as best as I can do, I'm just going to try to help you forget about the things that you don't want to think about with a little bit of time that I do have. And hopefully it'll be a fun enough time for you to want to tune back in at some point in time, whether it be the week after or month down the road. It, like I said, it's just a weekly small battle, but they're just as important as the big, huge battle, you know, like the Braveheart style war that I would have in Japan, where it's like, okay, we have this humongous show and we're going to be in front of over 40,000 people. Like, let's show them what we're all about. Yeah, that was kind of the difference, I guess.
Okay. I get it. Makes a lot of sense. I will say, when you talk about the, like people having so much to do or so much on their mind or their phone in their hand, or that's absolute truth. I remember going to wrestling shows. I'm looking around and everyone's on their phone. They have to tell someone about the thing they're seeing or whatever's going on. You know, they're thinking about so many other things.
Yeah,
so,
how they left the stove open or the garage door. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a lot going on.
And in Japan, like, everyone's laser focused on the action and fully invested.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so the alternate ending question is one I like to ask, meaning,
gotcha,
if wrestling wasn't the dream, what would you be doing right now, June 2020? What would you be doing?
You know, I love to say that I'd be involved in gaming somehow. But whether it be that I'd focused all my efforts into being a pro gamer or attempting to be a pro gamer, or, you know, now, like, streaming is a viable career option. I mean, if you're a good enough streamer, that can become your primary source of income.
Yeah.
You can make a living. You can survive. But if it weren't that, I probably would have been a teacher. Whether it have been, you know, overseas teaching English, or whether it just been at some high school, kind of in my hometown. That's what I was going to school for. I was actually going to school to become a teacher before I kind of just took a chance and went out to a wrestling camp and got my contract with WWE. So,
That's so crazy.
I would have just followed that, you know, and who knows if I would have been sidetracked and got lost in the dream of trying to do something with gaming. But I do know that I'm not naive enough to say that I would program video games or anything. I just probably wouldn't have it in me to do it. my computer science ability is not good enough, but from a creative standpoint and from just, I guess, a competitive standpoint, I might have had the drive and ability possibly to really dedicate myself and take myself to the next level.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. I was a teacher for 5 years, so that's interesting.
Oh, really? Well,
yeah. That was my thing right out of school. I taught until I couldn't do it anymore. I taught middle school, and those kids are crazy. So this is like 13 hormones in full effect and just crazy kids.
After you got out of it.
Yeah, they kept me young, though. They really did.
Mm-hmm.
I was into the same stuff they were into, so that was like
nice.
Fun conversations. But yeah, it's definitely the most rewarding. So since you mentioned teaching, would you at some point, you think, like post-wrestling, think about like a school or some sort of education to, you know, teach wrestlers?
When I was in Japan, I did do a lot of extracurricular stuff where I was training a lot of the women out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was super rewarding. It was a great feeling. Whenever I could with the young wrestlers in DDT, when I was kind of a staple there, I would train with a lot of those guys too, because I used to live in the dormitory with all of the young wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun for me. It tested my abilities. I felt like I was kind of helping the new generation. I always wanted to help the next generation. And I always wanted to make training fun for people and make it feel like they took something positive away from every session. Probably people from my era and of course from before my era probably have a lot of horror stories from when they were trained, when they're in training, because just the methods were a lot different back then than how they are now. And
yeah.
I sort of feel that there were probably a lot of promising young athletes that had a bright future had the trainers just nurtured them better rather than try to beat the living daylights out of them and break them down emotionally and physically. I feel maybe there was a place and time for it because, you know, as you probably know, when we were kids, there were still a lot of incredible professional wrestlers. So maybe back then there was a time where weeding out those types was the right thing to do. I don't know. I never grew up in that era, but I think as times change, you have to sort of adjust accordingly to the times. And it's just not acceptable anymore just to have kind of like a trial by fire and just day in and day out, just beat the tar out of someone and keep wondering if they're going to come back. And if they do come back, you know, it's like the old Tekken story where they actually get through like Kazuya off the cliff or whatever. And it's like, okay, if you climb back up, then you deserve to be my son.
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't be accepted in this day and age. Right. So
no.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's like I do get it. Maybe back at some point in time, or that was the way it was, and we were able to get some very awe-inspiring wrestling from that. But
yeah,
just now with even just the style the way it is too, and the body types and the personalities, you're not going to get the wide variety that's required to have a successful promotion by beating everyone that walks through your door.
Beating them up. I talked to some older guys and I remember them saying like it just wasn't supposed to be easy.
Right.
And I think
yeah.
that was the main thing that was in everybody's mind. Like no one can just walk off the street and get on TV. You're like you can't
mm-hmm.
do that. So you gotta separate the wheat from the chaff, as they say.
For
you know?
Sure.
And that was just the main mentality was that everyone can't do this, so
yes.
we need people to quit, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So
no,
I guess that's, you know, that's kind of a thing. So leading into my last wrestling question, then I got a bunch of gamer stuff.
Yeah.
Why do people fail that seek the dream of pro wrestling?
There are many types of people that aspire to become professional wrestlers, and depending on what it is that you are and you know what background it is that you come from, it's really hard to prepare yourself for the type of work that we do. Like it's unless you were, you know, a Hong Kong cinema stuntman or something like that, which is like something very, very specific, it's tough to have to go in with your body prepared for the type of punishment that it's that it has to take. Even if you are more of a character-based wrestler, you're going to have to take your licks at some point eventually, and you have to be able to learn how to fall safely and be able to do this on possibly a daily basis. And, I mean, if you want to be the type of person that actually, you know, grinds it out and you want to be in the fight of your life every day of the week, if you want to be a wrestling man's wrestler, then that's even more difficult to do because, at least physically, because you have to learn how to fall safely in a variety of different ways, and then you have to come up with new and original ways to fall so that the way that you fall looks visually different from the other guy. Because if you're just taking a very basic, you know, looking back bump for everything, just by doing that, essentially, you kind of fit in with everyone else. So if you... And not only that, but it looks like you're arriving with a very limited tool set. In my just thinking back in history, it's easy to remember which guys stood out to me because of the way that they took damage and the way that they took punishment. Even though it looked odd at times, but it was almost there was no way you could replicate it. You know, I think about a guy like Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect. The way that he took moves, the way that he sold, the way that he bumped around, his speed, his agility. There's no one else really like him that was able to do what it is he could do. And then there are guys like, you know, even Ravishing Rick Rude, who just looked like $1 million, had an incredible body. But it may not have been as agile or as limber as like a Kurt Hennig, but he was able to sell a move in a very different way so that you could buy into a performance, you know? It's all about stepping out of your comfort zone and separating yourself from the pack and being able to kind of be ready to take a little bit of pain because of it. And no one kind of escapes the world of wrestling unscathed. So it's how do you adjust to that? How can you have an achy back, neck, knee, elbow, but then still do what you have to do, still do what people expect of you, and then still push yourself to another level when it comes down to it? It's really difficult. And you have to, I think too, is like a big part of getting into anything is being a fan first and foremost. You have to enjoy what it is that you're getting into. You know, if I wanted to make movies, I probably would be a fan of movies originally.
Yeah.
If I wanted to get into music, I would probably have to be a huge fan of whatever genre or whatever it was, or type of genre, type of music, or the lifestyle before getting into it. Same with martial arts, same with anything that you want to do as a career choice. So I think you have to walk a fine line eventually where not only do you have to go in as a fan, as someone who's very passionate and who loves what they're doing, but there has to be a moment where you have to understand that what you're in is also a business as well. And you have to think about the type of, where do you fit in that structure? You know, where is it that you can, where you can be an asset to somebody? Where is it that you can be an asset to a show so that you have a place on a card? Not being a fan just isn't enough, because chances are, even if you can do a shooting star press, there's probably a good chance, if you want to do this at a high level, there's someone who can do it better than you. They can jump higher than you. They can get, you know, looks prettier than you. You know, they had 20 years ahead of you to do this thing, so they're already established. What is it about you that makes you original? You have to, I mean, if you're going to do it as a career, you also have to accept the fact that it now becomes a business, and you have to have a business mind approach to everything that you do on top of the passion, the raw passion that you have behind your performance. It's difficult because a lot of things in wrestling, you're not going to have an agent that tells you what to do and how to do it. You're going to have to learn all of those skills on your own, because it's only at the extreme high level that there starts to be things like agenting and management and, you know, card structure, show structure, match structure. All of those skills you have to develop on your own, or you have to just be lucky enough to be in an area where someone will take you under their wing and kind of show you the ropes. So I think why people fail could possibly be, they don't have access to that. They're led on the wrong path, or just don't, they're misguided. They don't have a way to pursue it, or just could be, and this is just, I think it's just genetics, because I have no other, some people can, they're just born to be able to take more damage, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they may be, you may be a tough guy, maybe you're an incredible athlete, you're a CrossFit champion, you're a, you know, gold medalist in gymnastics, but as soon as you start taking a couple falls, you know, there goes, you know, dislocated shoulder, there's your first knee surgery, you collect a lot of those early on in your career, you're just never the same. Not only will you not move the same, but you become more fragile, and then you become gun shy, and then it just, it's a snowball effect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's really rough, and I think that's why so many few, even though there's hundreds of thousands of wrestlers doing it, I think that's why so few emerge at the top level. It's just really, you have to do so much on your own, and you have to be so resilient, and you have to make the right business moves, and you have to, a lot of times it always helps to know somebody to kind of make sure that you make the right decisions, and you know, you can help yourself before getting to that top level, so you're more prepared mentally and physically, emotionally,
yeah.
You know, a lot
yeah.
of times. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So there's a lot of factors. Absolutely.
Yeah. Too many.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Way more than like the average athlete, I think, you know, which since like, I always say like pro wrestlers are the greatest athletes in the world because of the other things you have to deal with. You know?
Yeah, there really is. And there's no real manual. Like you don't just sit down, in a classroom with a bunch of people and there's no PowerPoint presentation and a manual, and they, you know, they kind of patch you back and send you home, and you start in the job. It's you're always learning on the job, and there's a huge aspect of it where you just have to educate yourself. And you know, for guys like, you know, myself, who I grew up in Winnipeg, and we do have a scene there, but we don't have anyone available to us, you know, right now, or at least for the past like 30 years or so, that could kind of show people, this is how you would go about doing this. You have to just get out. You have to spread your wings and go to whatever place will take you. And then maybe you'll meet someone there, or maybe you'll learn something new there. And then you have to go somewhere else, and maybe you'll learn something there. And
yeah.
And it just takes, and the crazy part is, if you decide to take that trip, you're probably paying out of your own pocket. And then once you pay out of your own pocket, if you learn anything or not, it's kind of by chance.
Mm.
And you may not learn that thing that takes you to the next level on that one trip, so you have to keep paying. You have to keep paying. Not only that, but the promoter has to still like you enough based on your performances and based on you as a person to want to bring you back. And
wow.
The fans have to like you too. So there's too many factors.
Yeah, it's not just being the guy who can catch the ball the best, you know, or can put
right.
the ball in the basket the best, you know. There's,
yeah, it's like, yeah, I throw
so many
a 200-mile-an-hour fastball. It's not enough.
Not enough.
You know what else is not enough of? Time. So we're going to take a time out here and come back next week with the rest of our chat with Kenny Omega. Thank you so much for that. Make sure you are catching Being the Elite on YouTube every week and on TNT, of course. AEW Dynamite. I'll be doing live shows every Wednesday, so keep an eye on those. And our next Mount Nerdcore show with MC Lars, MC Frontline, Schaefer is July the 11th. You can get all that at my website, megaran.com/shows. All right, see you next week for part two. Peace.